Spoken word. Hard to start with us, eh?
That was a first.
Trying to set the tone here. I'm trying to get myself started. Okay. Coletta, if you'd stand and lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, I'd appreciate it. Frank is over to our right.
No, here.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Which was against the window here. For everybody, would you like to introduce yourselves again? Starting with a gentleman in the gray shirt. I can't remember his name.
The gray shirt. I'm Bill Samlin. I'm the chair for the Irvine Senior Festival. Also, I know we have some veterans here. I was kind of curious to be able to see veterans that are Iraqi and Afghanistan. In this case, please call me a pass off challenge once the swimming basketball.
My name is Bill Shaw. I'm Bill's, in a way, more of sport up here. I'm also a fine senior councilman.
Bill, we sort of got short shift there on the coin. Could you go over that again for me one more time? That's for veterans of Afghanistan and Iraq?
It's primarily. He used to pass these out many years ago. Yeah. I think it's primarily officers that, you know, now and you're higher, like many sergeants on the bus, sergeant in the service. And it's something that the military passes on. In this particular case, I am also on the committee for the Northwood Memorial that has the names of every Iraq and Afghanistan veteran on the hill. So we always have, we used to have the Veterans Day Memorial there, but now we're going to have the Memorial Day and fancies out all of the Iraq and Afghanistan. The Vietnam walls. Basically closure for us Vietnam vets, and the serious kind of closure for a lot of Iraq and Afghanistan. A lot of veterans out there that they're not aware that we have a memorial. So I just try to make sure that everybody's aware and I can show them where it is.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I've heard of that one yet. Seeing the Vietnam. I just got one. So of course, there's the pen that is available for any Vietnam veteran, whether they served in country or not. And there's also a pen for the spouse of deceased Vietnam veterans. So I'm gonna maybe there's a movement in place to do something similar for Iraq and Afghanistan veterans as well. So I'll check into that a little bit more. Thank you very much, Bill. Okay. Besides introducing yourselves, did either of you have any public comments? Okay. Got to we'll do a roll call. I guess I was getting ahead of myself. Oh, maybe you want to do that?
That's
I don't think Scott's ever coming. Let's put it back.
Elaine Genoway.
A present, and just so no one gets insulted if I get up while they're talking, I have to leave it.
Thank you.
Ken Hickman. Mary Ann Klinger.
Here.
Beth Levin. Here. John Pointer.
Present.
Tony Rodella. Dave Tetzlock. Absent. We have a quorum.
I never get so old, Tony.
We're gonna miss it. I love hearing it.
Yeah, we're gonna miss it.
Yes.
Okay. We have a presentation today by Meredith on older adult cohorts. This was supposed to be presented during the August meeting, but we didn't have an August meeting.
Yeah,
okay. Yes. So we adapted. Okay. So we've moved it to our September meeting. So, Meredith, take it away, please. Okay.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
So one of the things that we had talked about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago, what does it mean to be a senior or an older adult, and who comes to mind when we think about these people during our meetings. And so we decided to dig into that a little bit more today. Next slide. So I have a background in gerontology, and in gerontology, we do think about groupings of different age groups. And so even though all people over 18 are considered adults, there's a large difference between a 21-year-old and a 45-year-old. And so we have young adults and middle-aged adults, and all those kind of breakdowns are helpful. In the same way for older adults, you don't want to lump everyone together from the age of 60, where an Older Americans Act can kick in, to someone that's in their 90s or even older. So something to consider as we're making decisions and recommendations at SCAC is, who are we talking about, and do we need to think about different groups within the senior population? Next slide. So typically we think about 3 older adult life stage subgroups. They're called the young old, the middle old, and the old old. And this is something that you'll see in gerontology textbooks in terms of the age groupings. And so the young old is about 65 to 74. And typically those folks are active and have different needs, of course, than the middle old, which is 75 to 84 years old. And then the old is over 85. And so really the question is, when we're kind of deliberating and thinking about programming, or are we always thinking about the person using the walker? Or are we also thinking about the people that are more active and that are going to want to engage in different ways and might benefit different branding, marketing, and programming? Next slide. So a lot of times what we think about in gerontology is age-friendly health systems. And this is something that you may hear about when you go to webinars on gerontology or older adult or aging issues. Something that the Hartford Foundation has been promoting for a few years, and it's the framework of what really matters. And so what matters to each person is different, and that's how we start out to see what each older adult would like. And the 3 things that feed into that are typically medication, mentation, which we've been talking about at SCAC, cognitive abilities and screenings, and then mobility, the ability to get around. And so one of the ways that we might be able to use this framework is, what matters and how does that change within each subgroup when we're also considering prevention, but also interventions for people that need help right in the moment. So is this something that you've all heard about before, this 4 M's framework?
Mentation term.
Yeah, mentation. So how people are able to think and manage their own lives because of their mentation, and that really ties in with what Patty's been talking about with dementia care aware and the cognitive screenings. So this is just another lens to think about programming and what people need and what they might want. And we've been talking about medication a lot recently too. We had Bill Liu come and talk to us, and we've also been concerned about fentanyl in older adults. So these are just kind of the main buckets that a lot of people use to evaluate programs now. Next slide. So this is a cool graphic that I found about the different generations that are around today. So we've probably all thought about the baby boomers a lot. They're our upcoming group of older adults. But maybe the older adults that we have in our mind that we're thinking about when we're meeting as a group sometimes is the silent generation, which is the generation before them. And then we'll move on to Generation X, which is my generation that's starting to think about aging and maybe caring for aging parents. That you can go on and see that we go all the way now to the Zoomers or Generation Z. And all of these generations have different characteristics in terms of what they've experienced, what they want, and what they respond to, and how they identify as a group.
What's after Zoomers? I can't see that either. I don't know if that generation has a name yet or not.
It looks like something that's cut off at the very top.
TBA, I'll try to find the original slide and see if I can find it. And sometimes the names of the generations change, like the millennials started out as Generation Y, and then they switched to the millennials. as we go along.
Silent generation.
Silent generation, yes. Yeah. And they're smacked in between the greatest generation and the baby boomers, and they typically don't get a lot of thought or attention. And we'll talk a little bit about them. So next slide. So the greatest generation is really well known because of Tom Brokaw's book. I don't know if you all read that. But they are going to be age 96 and older in 2023, which is kind of unbelievable, right? They were born in the 1900s through the 1920s, and they lived through that Great Depression and fought in World War II. And as a generation, they would describe themselves as driven, patriotic, team players, and they're the parents of the boomers. And although, like, in my mind's eye, I think a lot about this generation, there's only 100,000 left in the United States today, which is kind of wild as things keep going, right? As we're thinking about programming, you know, we might be thinking about this greatest generation because they've been so influential in our lives, but really they're not going to be the seniors of today and tomorrow for very much longer. Next slide. Then we have the silent generation. So those folks are now 78 to 95. So they're today's middle old and oldest old. The oldest members of this generation were born during the Great Depression, and they were children during World War II and came of age in the 50s and 60s. This generation is silent for a number of reasons. They're smaller than the generation before and after them. They're known as thrifty, respectful, loyal, and unassuming, and they have a 60% tech adoption. So they're more tech savvy than we think sometimes. So I know in a lot of our discussions, sometimes we're assuming that older adults don't have any tech savvy, but that's not necessarily true, and it's going to become less and less true as we're thinking about older adults and their needs in Orange County. And you can see some pictures of people in the silent generation. I can see Paul McCartney, for one, up there, Mick Jagger, Michael Bloomberg, Sophia Loren. So it's interesting to, and Martha Stewart, it's interesting to see the people that are in these generations and kind of how they identify as group. Clint Eastwood, I see too. Next slide. So the silent generation, this is just a little bit more about them. We see a lot of generational battles. I think some of this came to a height during the pandemic. I don't know if anyone's heard of OK Boomer, but that's something that a lot of the kids said, that they're annoyed with the boomer generation. The boomers and the zoomers have been kind of feuding a little bit. and then Generation Xers, we don't like the millennials because of their avocado toast, et cetera, et cetera. So the different generations have problems with each other because they have different values and different characteristics. And they take shots at each other, like the boomers may be making fun of people with high debt and housing problems. But there's one generation that's missing from the battle, and that's the silent generation. They're just so agreeable that they're not in a fight with anyone.
I take personal...
Exactly.
And then you'll see not so silent generation.
No. Oh, okay. Well, of course, these are generalities, but this generation's not known for being combative like some of the others are. Next slide. Okay. Then we have the boomers. And so all of these folks that you see here are famous boomers. And you can see that the boomer generation starts in 1946.
Oh, yes.
You see someone you recognize?
Only two.
We have Kim Cattrall, Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, no him. Is that Billy Joel?
Billy Joel.
Yeah. Maria Shriver.
Yeah. I think that's Amy, what's her name, on the upper right?
The writer?
Yeah, the writer, Amy.
Amy Tan.
Yeah, Amy Tan. Yep. Billy Joel, Maria Shriver, Tommy Hilfiger. And I think that's John Leguizamo. I can't say his name right. He's the
famous. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, on the right.
I'm not sure who the bottom left is, though.
I need to hear him talk to it.
Okay, next slide. So the baby boomers are now 59 to 77. So they're today's young old and middle old. And next year, all boomers will qualify for Older Americans Act programming. Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, you know, under the purview of the Office on Aging. They're going to redefine retirement as they have redefined every stage of their lives. And the size of this cohort is going to give us huge caregiver challenges. If you think about the boomers of all socioeconomic statuses are going to be leaving the workforce, or they already have. And then they're going to need help as they age, and we have smaller generations coming behind them. So that's a lot of what we have going on. It's not that people just aren't working, it's those fewer workers that are living in the United States. They're expected to remain active in retirement and want more dynamic, vibrant programs. They're not going to be passive recipients of services. So maybe that's something that you also see. We see that too. The boomers are the new type of older adult consumer, and they're redefining what it is to be a senior. So a lot of times when I talk to boomers, they don't think of themselves as seniors at all. They want to identify in that way. And so that's something for us to consider as we're messaging to them. They have negative perceptions of senior services and senior centers. That's where old people like their parents go or went, and they have no interest in bingo and blood pressure screens.
I agree with that, because I volunteered to test the senior center, and when we're out trying to do PR, there's such a negative connotation. Seniors are too young for that,
right? Exactly.
So we're thinking of rebrand.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what we all have to do, right?
But they do like bingo.
There's
a lot of bingo. A lot of bingo fans.
Anaheim Senior Center has changed their name from Senior Center to Community,
yes.
Community Center.
Community Center, yeah. So it's more inclusive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so a lot of the National Council on Aging has money to provide technical assistance to senior centers nationwide. And so I went on their website. They're recommending going for more active things like beer tasting, biking clubs, and things that we wouldn't have seen in senior centers 20 years ago. Next slide. So we also have a lot of solo agers coming up with the boomer demographic. It's on the rise. More Americans are single. There's more unmarried individuals in this group of boomers. Fewer had children. And it's estimated that 20% of the upcoming older adults are going to be solo agers, which means that they are going to not have typically an adult daughter helping them as to arrange services. They're going to either need to have government intervention in terms of information referral and case management, or if they have wealth, they're going to have to hire someone to do that for them. So that's going to be a really big change that we're going to see. That we have to consider when we're thinking about this upcoming group and what their needs are going to be. Next slide. So, this always cracks me up. 55 years old, but is what changes with the cohort. So the Golden Girls and the cast from Just Like Us are basically the same age in those two photos.
It's Sex and the City.
That's Sex and the City. Yeah.
That's now called Just Like That.
Oh, and Just Like That. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of encapsulates how people's perceptions of themselves and the way they present themselves is different going forward.
Yeah. Isn't that wild?
Yeah. So we have to, I think that I'm guilty of this. I'm thinking of the group on the right when I'm thinking about older adults, but we have the group on the left.
Well, what's startling is when I think of my mother at my age,
right?
It's completely different.
Totally different life experience and way of living, right?
Yeah.
Okay, next slide. So points to ponder, how might we consider the young old, middle old, and old old during our SCAC discussions. We need to be thinking about these different cohorts and what their needs are going to be and not just lumping a huge group together. And then how do the various cohort needs and expectations inform our work? I think that's it. Yeah, I would love to hear what everyone's feedback is.
I think you hit the nail right on the head. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In terms of our perception of what older adults are, and we really do start need to think more in those, young old, middle old, and old old as we decisions.
Well, and I think we've kind of thought about it, but we've put terms to it. Mm-hmm. Now we can speak about it. What I find most concerning and most challenging for the aging community are those seniors who will be solo agers. And that's something that we need to pay particular attention to and kind of provide whatever outreach is necessary for them, because they don't have family doing it. The benefit for the solo agers coming up is now at least they're a little more tech savvy. So right now, a lot of the seniors who are relying on their children,
right,
for their grandchildren is because they're not as tech savvy. So but that is a code word to be very
one of the things that I didn't see out there was I remember when I first, after I graduated from college, it was I was working on it was available and it was yuppies.
Right, that went away, right?
Yeah.
The yuppies were, when I was a kid in the 80s, the yuppies were like, they drove Volvos and had big careers, right?
The wannabes. Yeah.
But they didn't have kids. Wait, the yuppies, did they have kids or did they not have kids?
It was before they had, there was a young, upwardly mobile,
well, yeah,
professional.
Oh, they had kids later, but 20% of them didn't have kids.
Yeah.
Possibly.
They're more on a professional, materialistic trajectory.
Right. They had money.
It was me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the me, right. The me generation.
Yeah.
Is there anybody in this room that's not a boomer?
I'm not a boomer.
By 1 year.
You're not a boomer?
Oh, no, I am the edge. No, they're not.
What do you mean?
No, he said, is there anyone in this room who is not a boomer?
I was silent.
I'm not a boomer. I'm a silent.
Oh, yes.
I don't think it was silent.
Wow.
Well, no one here is part of the silent group.
Let's
no. I'm always struck by how the boomers have changed.
Even when I was a kid, you were not
everything
to talk.
As they grow, as they
and they've dominated
yes.
each, you know,
yeah.
each
yeah.
sector.
Yes,
and there's just so many.
Yeah, there's so many. Yes.
Worse, more dynamic, more
and women were always in the
yes,
certain
yes.
to their how they attack problems.
Yeah, there's another fascinating book that I haven't read that my husband has called The Fourth Turning, and it talks about how every four generations are similar to each other. That's fascinating.
I think,
yeah,
what goes around comes around.
What's it called?
The Fourth Turning,
The Fourth
Turning,
Turning.
Right. It talks about generations and four seasons and how there's good times and bad times and how it just kind of flows every four generations.
I think there is probably going to be a solar ages, more need for caretakers.
Oh, yes. But we don't have enough caretakers because the lower generations, there's not enough of them. So what are we going to do?
I think that they need more of the assisted living and nursing, but they need it more affordable. They find a funding way. I know my neighbor asked me what would I consider affordable. And because we went through this with an older family member. And I said, if they take your income, not your house and your everything, just what you live on and your income. Some it'll be higher, lower, whatever. But if that's what they
accept. That's probably what's gonna happen because next year the asset is going away for Medi-Cal.
Well, they're gonna have to do something. In leisure world, of course, I see a lot. It's a whole different life. People don't have extended family around them. And then there's these needs. I worked in security there, and it was, you know, I'd be open in people's pillboxes. And they were a little frightened by, they're all by themselves. Nobody's coming home at the end of the day to figure this out. And so we were running around doing that for them. But the truth is, they need that. You know, when they hit the late 80s, early 90s, they got arthritis in their fingers and they, you know, they can't get around as much. And then some of them did need the assisted living, but they would, my neighbor would have flourished much more in that than where she was all by herself.
I think the immigration is part of the conversation too, because we don't have the people that are able to work in the United States right now.
That's true.
Yeah. So lots of, never a shortage of issues.
No. I could go on, but I won't. okay. Next item, chair items. New business. Some of you did not have the opportunity to hear the introduction of the new bylaws at our last SCAT meeting. So I was going to ask if Pauline can sort of provide a brief overview. Anybody else that wants to chime in?
Sure.
And we'll go from there. Okay, Pauline?
Sure. So at the last meeting, I don't know who was there and who wasn't, but the last meeting, we had a very robust discussion about changing the bylaws. And the impetus for this came from the chair and vice chair of SCAC way back when, where there was consensus and a feel that we need to update it to kind of be somewhat less restrictive in enticing new members to come and join the committee and allow for a better flow and more meaning and more engagement of the committee members. So the bylaws, a bylaw ad hoc committee was formed with the members of SCAC being part of it, myself included from an OOA perspective. And we reviewed the bylaws that were currently in place. And there were several recommendations that came out of it. So fast forward, going back and forth between all these, we had at least four or five meetings before we decided that, okay, this is what we're going to bring forward. So brought that forward last, our last SCAC meeting. Again, great discussions and really good ideas and suggestions came out of things that we hadn't thought about or things that we thought, yeah, you know, at the time it was a good idea, but then when you heard other opinions, we may probably want to leave some things in place. However, that being said, the discussion went on for a long time. Mm-hmm. People started leaving and we ended up without a quorum at the meeting. So we couldn't take any action on it at all. But we got some really good insight. I think everyone around the table got really good insight as to how people were thinking. So the plan is to bring the bylaws back on the next agenda in October for more discussion and hopefully some action by the committee. I would ask everyone here to please do your due diligence before you come to the meeting. The whole reason you get the agenda and any documentation ahead of time is so that you review it and you come prepared. And I believe there is a request, if anyone has any suggestions, to send them to Meredith directly so that we can kind of consider them.
And today I have received no emails.
No emails at all?
Okay. I'm surprised.
And again, I think the goal of the bylaws is to kind of make things flow a little bit better. Make people feel like they're more engaged and they have an impact. The concerns I think have been the subcommittee meetings where people come and we listen to presentations and presentations that are very, very good that probably would have been beneficial to the entire group. Some of the concerns were the people who give the presentations are professionals. They don't have time to come into a subcommittee meeting and then go into a full meeting. Another thing that was concerning was the 8 hours of volunteer keeping track of volunteer hours. I don't think that's an issue to keep track. If people want to keep track of their hours, that's great. But the way the bylaws were worded, it was mandatory 8 hours. And that was a big deterrent for a lot of people, especially the younger, older cohort coming up who maybe like still working, still have jobs, still have to manage their time a little bit more effectively. So am I missing
something? And a name change for branding purposes,
name change,
like we were talking about today.
Yeah, we had a name change. And I think one of the, there were three different names. And I think we decided to, well.
Commission.
There was nothing decided.
We have a recommendation.
Like all those three or four, I think.
Yeah.
Four.
Yeah, there were four.
None of them were picked. Different ones.
Well,
yeah.
I think,
Orange
yeah, there's an
Orange County
advisory commission.
Commission.
Yeah, go from council to commission. So that was one of the recommendations. Another one was to reduce the amount of SCAC appointees from 20 to 10. And after really good discussion on that, we thought, you know what? Let's just leave it the way it is. Let's leave 20 appointed by SCAC, 10 by city selection, and 10 by board of supervisors. Because it allows, even though we've never probably had 40 people on this on the council, but it allows the freedom and allows the flexibility in the event that we do have a rush of people wanting to come and serve at the seniors, you know, or older adults, pardon me, wrong label. still.
I'm not offended by seniors.
Okay, good.
Depends on what generation you are.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a well-earned title.
It is a well-earned title.
I get hurt, but I identify as a senior.
Okay. Oh, didn't you participate as part of the bylaw?
I was sitting there, but I didn't.
Oh.
I mean,
okay, I thought you were on the committee.
No, the people on the committee were Meredith, Crystal, Stanley Stang.
Barbara.
Was Barbara Slim?
Yeah.
And myself. I think that was it, right?
Rachel.
Oh, Rachel, that's right.
Did we resolve the council decisions and we were supposed to focus on section 3?
But we didn't vote on anything because we
so had to vote. So those things are all still in the air?
Yes,
they are.
We had resolved.
No.
Marianne, sorry, you had a...
Yeah, I have a couple of comments because it was brought up that to getting rid of the subcommittees, and I don't think we should do that.
Okay.
And the reason I'm thinking along those lines is it is an opportunity for a smaller group to talk, to speak out. Sometimes in the big one, it's, you know, not as easy, not as what can be happening. And they were talking about ad hoc. Well, by the time you do that, you have a mission and a place to go and not an open kind of discussion. You're doing one thing or another. And also, I'm not in favor of getting rid of subcommittees. I understand people that can't make it. That's fine, you know.
But
don't hold a gun to their head. But, you know, in general, I know what they were saying is that ad hoc would sound like more useful. I'm thinking there's more of an opportunity to speak in a smaller group sometimes about issues and warm up to instead of jumping into the topic all the time. And second, I'm not real crazy about older adults. Senior citizens, there's a certain dignity to citizens. Everybody knows that seniors is a euphemism for older. And I kind of, you know, I'm used to it, and it sounds a little more respectful than older. It's like Johnny Carson used to say, don't say old to an old person. So, anyway.
Sorry. Yeah, when I first read it, I go, oh my God, what are you doing, people? They're killing this thing. And then I went back line by line. And the more I read, the better I liked it, the better I liked it. As far as the committees, the idea behind it, I really, you know, I thought it was a great idea instead of, you know, just getting information to small little groups. Everybody hears it. At one time, this committee, which used to be called the Legislative Committee, was a very powerful committee because we could endorse bills and could endorse candidates. But again, it was a small committee, and all of a sudden, people took hands in their own. And using their own hands and messed it all up without everybody ever saying it. And it just messed it up. And like I said, after the fourth or fifth reading, I really think all the changes were necessary.
Right.
Well, just secondly, that's a telling statement because Tony's one of the
oldest,
one of the few remaining members here that have been here over a decade and a half, I think, Tony.
Yeah.
I've got a photo here. Somebody took a look at. You can see Tony in his heyday here, and this is 2006. Some of you may be acquainted with Jim Lee. Okay. It's interesting, some of the faces that I see here that are no longer participating. Go ahead, Elaine, sorry.
I'd like to piggyback on Marion's comments in that the standing committees allow for more focused discussion. And it's a group of people who are interested or have some
expertise in a certain topic. And the way the bylaws are currently, it's you need to sign up for a standing committee, but attendance isn't taken. And if you don't show up, it's not held against you. So maybe if it was more worded that the standing committee participation was voluntary, my concern is that too much focus is being put on the presentations. And I had thought we had gotten away from that a couple of years ago, because the presentations were to bring committees or to bring SCAC members information. It's not that we're to be here as an audience and absorb all that. It's what do we do with what we learn from those presentations? So if there's a concern, you know, maybe it needs to be that there's a group of people or a committee or the standing committee chairs decide, okay, we know this presentation is really good. So instead of having it at a standing committee, we will send it up to the main SCAP for a presentation there. As far as people who are giving the presentations, for like 90% of them, that's their role in the organization, is to be giving presentations to groups and providing that information. So I wouldn't be concerned about double booking them. I'd be more concerned about a third of our SCAC members hearing the same thing twice. But there's nothing saying we have to have presentations at standing committees. The standing committees allow for a more focused discussion, and they could completely, maybe if the wording were changed, could be voluntary. But my concern is so much focus has been put on presentations and, gosh, we had a really good presentation here and we'd like to invite them there. Fine. But is that what SCAC's about, presentations? We are an advisory body to the Board of Supervisors. What have we done this year to take anything to the Board of Supervisors? I don't know that we have. So we're not fulfilling our role, and we're focusing on presentations, which the reason we have presentations is to bring us information so that we can go to the Board of Supervisors. So I think standing committees are good for topic areas, and they allow those members who have a specific interest to get together to work on it, to bring it to the full SCAC. Otherwise, we're 30 to 40 people sitting around a table once a month. And I don't know that we're fulfilling our role.
I think if we want to keep the standing committees, then the people that want them will need to take leadership of them, because that was how this whole thing started, was that no one wanted to leave standing committees.
Yeah. Well, and if you do away that you don't, I don't know whoever said that we have to have a presentation each month, but if you make that clear and it's more of a working.
I think people know that. They just don't know what to work on either. So
I think that's, you know, Beck, I know you want to jump in, but let me just clarify a couple of things. If the standing committees, I've been on this committee since January, since I got here, and I can tell you, putting the agendas together for each of the committees, mostly are presentations. And I think Elaine is correct. I think the SCAC as a whole needs to identify what the priorities of the group are. Pick one, pick three. I would pick 10, but the focus needs to be redefined. And the goal of standing down the subcommittees doesn't say those topics are going to go away. Housing and transportation is still going to be an issue. Senior citizens engagement is going to be an issue. Well-being reimagined is going to be an issue. The goal was to have a more robust discussion amongst the entire council as to where in those areas the focus should be. And I don't think we're having that. I think the leadership in terms of each of the standing committees, we've got lax. It's gone very, very lax in terms of the approach. And I think the mindset needs to change before we move forward. So that's all I have to say. Becky, you had your hand up.
I had a couple of things. I agree with the majority with what Lynn said. Quick point of clarification. the current nonprofit environment does not allow for folks that just be training folks. I would see only in national nonprofits would they have training folks. And that's from
The what folks?
So folks that are specifically dedicated to training, for example.
Organizations don't have an outreach person anymore. They're not
the
ones.
Yeah, all the outreach firms have kind of, unfortunately, due to funding cuts has kind of been, but, and the reason I say that is because I've been trying to get our ADRC person in, and she's the like chief person of the program. So she's, it's a little bit tight for her. And then the other thing, to your point, Alina, is I think that these meetings are recorded, right? Some meetings are recorded.
Yes.
If it's so important for someone to want to see a presentation, why can't they just go back and watch the recording? Like,
are the recordings, to my knowledge, are just audio that someone puts?
They're audio.
They're not video.
Okay.
Well, but they're available on the website if anyone wants to listen to them.
Audio. But maybe something going forward would be meetings like this where we do have a video, that is then maybe the videos for the month are attached to the SCAP agenda, the main SCAP agenda, so it's accessible, available to all SCAP members. So here's what happened at Senior Citizens Engagement. Click the link and then you can see the presentation. Maybe that's something that we could do going forward. That's a great idea. I'd much rather hear some presentations in the comfort of my home, you know, at a time when I'm ready to listen. So that's a great idea. Is that something we could do, Paul?
I'm going to have to look into it.
Okay. But if you had a link for this or something, that when you come out with the agenda, just the monthly agenda for the full staff, and have it, this is what happened at these meetings.
Okay, so are you talking about like videotaping the subcommittee?
No, not us videotaping, but that presentation that Meredith
just
emailed,
gave
that presentation.
We'll go. That goes after. At least I've been sending them.
Okay.
But there is a value, don't you think, to Meredith actually making the presentation so you can have a Q&A?
Yeah,
there is.
Okay.
There is.
So the other point I want to make is, so if you want to go down this direction, has anybody looked at what the local plan is? Have we seen a local plan?
The
AAA?
Yeah. The area plan? Yeah.
No. The local plan that involves the FDA. Each AAA is supposed to come up with a local plan, right?
Oh, we are.
Okay.
That's.
I bet there isn't a person in this room that knows a thing about that.
I do. Yeah,
you've seen Orange County's
survey for half.
We don't have.
So my point is, most of us have.
But John, we're right in the process. The MPA,
Are we supposed to have some input to that?
You are, but we're not there yet. That's the thing.
There's probably not a person at SCAP involved in the local plan development.
Well, you should be,
but
that's my point.
You should be filling out the surveys. Where we're at right now, John, is the Board of Supervisors is driving this, and the Board of Supervisors wants a full assessment of what's going on across all ages, from 55 and up.
Okay, well, let me try another one then. So the other cutting edge concept right now is the ADRC. Anybody know anything about that?
I know a lot about it.
Okay, that's two people. Anybody else know anything about that?
The ADRC is doing a presentation.
So that's my point, I guess. Okay, yeah, there's a couple people that know something about it. But if you want engagement, if that's where we're going, that's part of the process, right?
It's part, yeah. I mean, engagement should be part of the process. There should be a discussion amongst hold on a second, John. There should be a discussion amongst all the SCAP members, I think, at the beginning of each year, to define what are we doing? What did we accomplish last year? Where are we going? What are the goals and objectives for this year? And that doesn't seem to be material. We talk about it, we have these discussions about it, but nothing seems to materialize where there's a focus, a true focus on either housing, transportation, ADRC, you name it. We hear all the time out there, all the issues that are facing our older adults. Mental health issues, social engagement.
You've got me on a soapbox. So I've been involved with this thing, this animal, for a long, long time. Scott.
Yeah, I
okay.
Do.
You get what you ask for. Okay. So prior whatever you want to call them, prior administrations, but listen to me, I don't want your input. I don't need your input. But what we tried to do, you weren't here. Okay, so don't be offended. But it was more or less just let's just keep the status quo. Let's just make some, you know, let's make some presentations. We're not going to the Board of Supervisors. I'll leave that one. We're not going to the Board of Supervisors. So there's just a different mindset, in my opinion. And if somebody who's been here a little while sees that differently, please chime in. But that's the way I...
But we did change that.
I didn't admit.
Okay.
I'm telling you that when we transitioned from me to Elaine, one of the marching orders where we were trying to get more engagement from the Board of Supervisors.
Right.
So that's where we're going, but we're a long way from where I think we want to be in terms of interaction with the Board of Supervisors.
But it was a start, John. But it was it truly
I'm,
was
I'm acknowledging
a start.
That. I'm
you
acknowledging
know.
That. But again, to say that, you know, presentations were all we were, that's what they wanted. Okay. That's where we migrated to. Okay. It isn't that they self-created that. That's what basically the environment was at that particular time. But just make presentations at this point. And so we all recognize that that doesn't keep people engaged.
Right.
Okay. So we tried to see a transition, but that wasn't basically us coming up with that. I think that's what basically the cards we were dealt at the particular point in time. So
change is very difficult, especially
sure.
Remember when I became chair of SCAD, one of these, there used to be a housing and a transportation committee. And I said, well, that doesn't mean the state, you know, state things, housing and transportation are committed. I had people scream sentences in because I said, no, we're going to merge. And like I said, it was a very difficult thing for them to accept because they've been the status quo for as long as this committee had been in existence. But after at least 3-4 years, it went away, though, still here. And I think it'll be the same thing with this change. It's hard for people to accept the change. I'm under a mindset, if it's good, let's change. Not everybody thinks that.
Well, we'll see when we have our next meeting. Change can be good. And change is good because we need to respond what the current environment is. But as we're changing, let's make sure we see what is our purpose for existing and make sure we're fulfilling that role in how we change.
Right. No, I totally agree with Lynn, because coming from Supervisor Bartlett's office, where I was her advisor on senior issues, initially I was like, what are the senior issues? That letter that went to the Board of Supervisors that said, here's what we want to do. Out of that came the bridging the digital divide, the iPads. You know, what the board doesn't know, they can't take action on. You know, so it really is important to keep the board aware through the Office on Aging how things are, what the desires of this committee is. How can they be more effective and impactful? And they're not going to know that unless they're told. You know, I mean, don't have a crystal ball.
Which we haven't done.
Right. So, I mean, that is really important. As an advisory committee, that's what you do. You advise.
So what happened when we had asked the Office on Aging to go back to the Board of Supervisors with the 5 items and get feedback? What happened? Where's that at? Because that was where we stopped, and then we were going to move on from there.
Okay, I'll check with Claudia on the status of that. She was working on that, so I don't know where she's.
But I think that's where our stall is at this point, because we want to hear back from those 5 items, what their feedback was, so that we can focus on several of them. And because that was back in February. And now this is September.
I think
because that otherwise we can outreach to them at the office because I want to.
Sure. And I think you get these bylaws under control as to where we're going and what the focus is going to be, and there's action taken. I think that's the new template in terms of how this committee moves forward, you know, and where you want your focus to be, and the engagement. And the engagement is not just, yeah, let's do this. This is going to be great. Who is going to do it? Who is going to take the lead? When is it going? Who, what, where, when, why, and how? Not all has to be, you know, tabled out. And people have to be willing to step up to the plate. You know, it's easy for us to sit back and criticize what we're not doing or what isn't getting done, or be reactive versus proactive. Being proactive is a good thing for all of us.
Holly, do you have any sense for once SCAP does approve the bylaws, how long it'll take for it to go through county council to be effective?
I'm guessing, based on the timeline for getting ASRs on the agenda, I'm guessing March, April next year. By the time it gets, because if we approve in October, we have one meeting left in November. It's got to go back to county council. We're into December to get an ASR. If I want to get an ASR on the agenda in March or April, I have to start the process probably the end of January to get that. And that's all dependent because it's a 6-week process because it goes through so many reviews before it actually makes it to an agenda.
So we're looking at least 6 months of at least still operating under the old bylaws.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
I think Beck has had a
clarification. So if we vote for adoption of the bylaws and the subcommittees are abolished, that would be still meaningful.
Well, Elizabeth asked the same thing earlier. And the answer to that is until the Board of Supervisors adopts the new bylaws, everything stays the same. So
try and lock the door, but I mean, my sense is it's not required to be here.
That's correct.
Somebody sits here and says, there's no future in this. What am I?
That's my point. We're just limping along.
Yes.
So I asked Pauline, could it be put in the bylaws that it'll be retroactive as to January 2024, that these meetings no longer exist? Pauline says, no, that's gone.
We can't do that. The county council wouldn't let us do that. And you can't do anything until the Board of Supervisors approves it. So,
because we're just going to be limping along, knowing.
We get a pair of crutches for us.
Let's think about that though for a moment.
But also think about what is it? What are the topics we should be discussing here?
Exactly.
And what do we want to bring to SCAC, to bring to the Board of Supervisors, saying these are the needs of the seniors in Orange County? That's what we're supposed to be doing.
I'm bringing more guidance, though, because I think that we lost a lot of momentum when we gave recommendations like the Well-Being Reimagined worked on for many, many hours, wrote up a paper, and then we got feedback that's not within the county's purview. So I think that that's where a lot of things got deflated, too.
Well, that's when... when those things are being recommended, it needs to be recognized. There are things the county does and there are things that other entities do. And we are reporting to the Board of Supervisors.
And everything that the committee was interested in was outside of the county's purview.
Well, and they need to focus on what the county can do.
But one of the things that I hear that I think would be really helpful is if, I don't know if staff leadership is in transition, it sounds like it kind of is, but once, like, in the near future, if SCAP leadership were to have like a retreat and use the older adult if assessment that's currently going around for like desires and stuff like that for older individuals, and also like what they're hearing at SCAP meetings and stuff like that to inform how to go forward with the SCAP in general.
A lot of things are in limbo right now because we're waiting for the local playbook. But we still have to do our work.
Yeah. Speaking of doing our work.
Yes.
Moving right along, this is an excellent window into what occurred at the SCAC meeting as well. A lot of strong feelings and emotions.
chair items. I've already covered that. Legislative tracking. So there are two bills remaining that managed to get out of the legislature and onto the governor's desk. One involved the funding of CSL that passed, governor signed it. That's awesome. We are on the tax checkoff until 2032. So that's huge.
How much money, John, is that?
Yes, we do not have a minimum. So we're like the commission and we're like the two first responder organizations that maintain the monuments in the Capitol park there. So we bring in anywhere between 100 and 130,000 on any given year, Tony.
The check.
Yeah. And that checkoff money is used for advocacy. We use the term advocacy because we're a state agency. Anybody else would say they're lobby. We don't say lobby. Okay, that's the state agency's not allowed to lobby. So we're probably splitting hairs, but that's the way it goes. So that's how we maintain our annual session. And that's how we also meet in the Capitol during the course of the year. Everything else is funded, and this was huge. Everything else is funded through the general fund. So prior to 2019, we had a state employee that was funded out of donations. We argued that's ludicrous. Yeah. Okay, it's probably against the law. But anyway, we managed to successfully see a shift where we have split funding sources, one for administration, one for our advocacy. The other involves training of AAA staffing on homelessness. I thought that was dead in appropriations because it was placed in suspense. However,
a lot of things made it out of suspense.
Yes. However,
unfortunately,
somebody saw Second Light and it did resurrect and it wound up being signed by the governor. So that's huge.
That's right.
Two other bills I want to bring your attention to. SB 411, Senator Portantino, the Brown Act. Okay, someone in Los Angeles approached Senator Portantino, and he wrote a law proposing to take the open meeting requirements and reinstate what was what we were doing during the pandemic. Okay, again, I didn't think that had a prayer. That has managed to make its way through the legislature. It's not on the, I believe it's on, it's on its way to the governor's desk, I believe. The other one is, I think it's 599, SB 599 by Senator Laird. Could be, I think it's 599. That involves Bagley King. So that doesn't apply to anyone in this room but CSL. That is, again, removing, suggesting the removal of several requirements. One, you don't have to publish the addresses. Those people participating through the virtual process. That's the big one. Second, you only have to have one person in a public location. That's another biggie. So a quorum can be achieved without having to have four or five or whatever the magic number is sitting in a public location somewhere together. So those are big changes. We'll see if that one makes it as well. 411 has got an exigency clause in it. It goes into effect as soon as the governor signs 599 or 559, whichever it is, if the governor signs it, will be in place in January. The interesting thing about 411 is going to be, so there are a lot of AAAs out there that are watching 411 and they're going, we're going to figure out how to piggyback on that and introduce that. Because in many rural areas, it is extremely difficult to get people into
the AAA meeting in order to achieve the requirements in order to have a quorum. So there's some big issues, and they're losing participation. People aren't coming back after the pandemic to participate in the advisory committee meeting. So more to follow.
So, John, just for clarification on that one, it's going back to pre-COVID, like virtual meetings,
yes,
as opposed to in-person.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
As a, you know, as an option. You know,
as an option.
Yes. Yes. Okay. It's not exclusively.
Gotcha.
Okay. And it's a, but it is exclusively to LA at this point. So if...
Oh, not Orange County?
No, it's only LA at this point. So that's why I'm saying we're watching... There are a number of AAAs that are watching that area, going to be initiating. They'll probably, if I were them, I'd go to Port Kano and say, hey, okay, we got it through. Let's go back and reintroduce it. If you don't mind, expand it to all of the AAAs.
Statewide, yeah.
Yeah. So, but you, if you follow the process, boy, the civil liberty unions, the newspapers came out with knives on it. They...
Versus the aging and disability.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, is that just for the AAAs, or is it for any meeting under the Brown Act?
It's in Los Angeles. I can't get the exact wording, Elaine, but it focused on something called a local volunteer group that doesn't have legislative
authority.
There's some other wording there, but it was obvious it was initiated by the office and agent in LA.
So it wouldn't apply to city councils or city.
Not because of the legislative feature.
Okay. And I forget SB 525 Durazzo.
I don't have one. If you want to talk to that one, you can. I focused on only 411 and I can't even get the second number right. 599, I think it is.
So SB 525 got out of suspense. And that's the $25 minimum wage for healthcare work. Mm. So that would impact older adults very greatly because it'll be a ripple effect. It won't just be for nursing homes. It'll ripple to assisted living and other care settings for sure. So we're anticipating that the governor will sign it because there was a deal between the administration, SEIU, and the hospital association. And they took amendments and carved the state out.
Very interesting.
When's that going into effect? Did we get a delay on that?
It depends on, it's a very complicated bill with the amendments now. So it depends on geography, payer mix, setting type. So you basically need a chart to figure out when your minimum wage is going to go up, depending on if you're rural or not rural, and setting and your payer mix, and HCI is going to be publishing a table.
When you get it, can you send it my way?
Yeah. Can you bring the explanation with
you? Yeah.
Okay. That's what's going to take.
Yeah, no food.
Okay. Just as for some people in this room, remember, the CSL has what they call an annual legislative session in October. 3 days, 24, 25, 26, it's all virtual. If you're intrigued by how we operate, you're welcome to attend. It's virtual. Okay. There will be an in-person meeting on, of all days, October 31st. We're going to take some heat over Halloween. Okay. But it's all dictated on the hire and whether we can get a block of 50 to 60 weeks.
Yeah.
I
just wanted to.
Now, here's once it gets going, it's snowballs. The state has a per diem rate of $7, $11, and $23. They just adopted the federal. It's jumped dramatically. So I don't know if the county follows the state rates or not, but just check that out because we stumbled onto that. So that's going to change, I believe, how our per diem is calculated during the in-person meeting. Very interesting. Very interesting.
Okay. I'm
going to
share that.
Okay. Again, you can really get addicted to this stuff, to tell you the truth. It's fascinating to watch the gyrations and the politics and what, just because it makes the governor's desk doesn't mean a darn thing. Okay, I've seen bills that were unanimous never even, you know, never
something
even
like did. A day.
Yes. Okay. I have no, I don't believe any new members.
Not right now.
I have a question. Mr. Muslim. What are we going to do in the next 2 months, October, November, to show that we have accomplished something?
We need to get feedback from the Board of Supervisors on those 5 items, or we can take up the 5 items without getting feedback and see what we want to focus on.
I think it would be nice to show that
yeah.
we have accomplished something concrete. Mm-hmm. I think often, way back when, we really weren't.
So I haven't done this, the chair position at the subcommittee level for a long time. Used to be every year we provided an annual report that basically summarized what occurred during the year and what outcomes or results.
For me, I think that we can talk about that we've spent a lot of time, probably too much time because of the way things work with branding and perception so that we can reach all the different cohorts going forward.
And on the presentation schedule, speaking of presentations, October and November, I don't have any presentations listed for this.
That's fine, right?
Yes, so we're aware.
Can I see my first second on the other side? I thought I saw one with something on there. I have to go back.
No, I just remained scan. I wasn't here, but this was on my desk when I came. I took I just updated mine from that.
So doesn't the older adults needs assessment, we're not going to do that. I think we had, I'll have to go back and look. Okay.
Okay.
Worst case, we can do the traditional CSL. Summary of the top 10, if we want to, as a filler, okay? If we have to, unless someone else has a topic they would like to bring to the for next meeting.
Yeah, would you be the speaker on that?
Yeah.
I think that would be very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. For item 10, announcements and roundtable discussion.
Tony?
Okay. Thanks. I announced that the SCAC meeting, the last meeting, the November meeting, none of the changes, because I do support the changes that came out that were long overdue. But I think after it's either 19 or 20 years that they're on the somebody else people, but this will be my last meeting with this committee. So it's been a nice journey, pretty much, a lot of fun. That's it. I've enjoyed. Thank you, everybody.
Well, Tony, thank you because you were part of the group that led SCAC for a long, long time. That group included Dee Ehrman, Anna Boyce, Don McAllister,
Geyer.
Yes, Andy, Sherry Geyer, Dave Sullivan, Jim Levy, and I'm sure I'm leaving out somebody, but when I came in, that group was the core of the organization. All of those individuals have transitioned on. Thank you for your service.
Thank you
and
so
your
much.
Leadership. And your participation.
Okay.
That's hard to top. I'm not sure there's
can I have an are we going around?
Yeah.
So as a new member, I may be speaking out of turn, but I really like the discussion that we started today about what we're doing and what we're accomplishing, and that's I'd like to continue with that.
Absolutely.
But I like the presentations. I mean, I learn a lot, and I go back to my senior centers and I try to engage with them. I mean, just today, this different groups of eight, you know, young old, that concept, I think, can help how to approach our senior community and so on like that. So I get value out of the presentations. And our goal is to interact with the centers that we've been assigned to.
Yes.
So the information that I listen to, I take it back there. So something is happening. But the surveys, we've been asked to help get people to fill out the survey. So that's something concrete that we can do. And I went to the Board of Supervisors meeting that was held on the 9th. And I was there because there was another topic that I was interested in. And Claudia was there. And did you hear? And she spoke to the Board of Supervisors. There was an issue about AgeWell or the communal meals. And boy, they were fired up over that issue. And I know that issue is on their radar. Senior nutrition and the AgeWell contract. And I don't know if that RFP we've been asked to help out with, it pertains to that. But
something. What is the problem?
I guess they don't have a very good performance or track record. I'm just going by listening to the public hearing.
Right. Yeah.
And they were very upset. Don Wagner was really fired up that your hands were tied, that they had to pretty much approve that continuing to fund that program because that organization evidently has some challenges on how they're performing. And basically with Claudio, and there was someone else with her, I don't know
what, right.
They were saying that if you don't approve this, seniors are going to go without food. So they approved it very reluctantly.
So what's the problem? I don't
know much about this organization, but the Board of Supervisors was very much aware of it. They said it wasn't their first rodeo with them. But it seems like this is right on their radar. And if we could help with that issue and maybe that RFP, if that has to do with it, there's no question that that's something they're interested in.
What's interesting is I'm assigned now to the San Clemente Senior Center, so I went to do my first visit there, and I asked how many people are participating in the meals that are with AgeWell, and they replied that no one really is coming to congregate meals, that it's only home delivered, which I thought, well, that's unusual for a senior center.
I'd like to have in Mission Viejo. There aren't that many people ever since the end of COVID.
Right.
Go to those bunches. And so I told them, you need to have the monthly calendar out of the front desk. Oh, we do. No, they don't. I said, when you come in the morning, put them out the front. When you leave in the evening for 3 o'clock, put them out. Oh, we do. That is totally false. They don't. And so then I was there just Friday, and I'll go, oh, they're not there. No, they weren't there. So my point to them was, how do you expect to get people to eat lunch if you don't have the monthly menu out at the front?
Also, the San Clemente Senior Center said that the food was the same as the home-delivered meals food instead of a separate offering for a long time, and that food was poorly received. And so that's where they lost a lot of people.
That's
coming.
True. That is so true. But now the food is quite good. And you're not going to get people if you don't have the menu out there.
Then the food has to, after they get there, the food has to taste good.
Yeah.
The food what?
The food has to taste good once they arrive.
Exactly. Right. But with this new catering company, apparently it does. It's quite a different thing.
What's my question?
So
is it AgeWell who delivers to
the South County?
South County. And that's not a good organization? I mean, can they get another organization in there?
Is that what the RFP is about that we're watching into?
I can't say much.
Oh, we're not allowed to say.
And my perception is that Meals on Wheels Orange County is a larger organization that has really grown in their professionalism over the last 10 years and has connections with other organizations and is well known in the county, and Age Well's reputation seems to have diminished over the last 10 years.
Since their chairman passed away.
Marilyn Diddy. Marilyn Diddy. Yeah.
And the Age Well also has said that they, when I did my visit, that they weren't invited to co-host the South Orange County Senior Summit. They weren't concerned about that.
Well, the only reason I mentioned is because everything I heard was at a public hearing, so
right.
I'm not, I know you probably can't speak it out of it. It seems like we're wondering what the board is interested in and how
meals.
We can, and meals is a big issue for them. So if we could come back to them that our name is on this recommendation, and it would show some concrete productivity on our part that we were part of this issue that is clearly.
Well, I would like to engage more, to your point, I would like to engage more with Age Well, but Age Well rarely replies to me.
Oh, see, I don't know much about the right. I was shocked when I heard this.
Yeah.
And I felt really, I thought Claudia really, really handled the situation well. I felt like they were a little under the gun there.
Yeah.
With the Board of Supervisors. But it definitely seemed like there was an opportunity for us as our overall SCAC to maybe jump in and address that issue, because we're wondering what the board is interested in. That was clearly a hot topic.
So, knowing that you visit, you have a senior center, and you were also in a reporting mechanism back up on this. From your observation, besides, we're lucky Claudia's, I mean, Paulina's here, but maybe that's something we think about in the future.
Well, our hope is that if we had a longer meeting, that everyone would be able to talk this for 3 to 5 minutes about what's going on. Like I could say what my San Clemente visit was.
So maybe I'm going to give some thought to that in terms of if this is a committee process that we continue, that maybe part of that is we're all assigned to senior center.
Yes.
We are.
Okay.
Patty, give us. I have two.
I have two also.
Yeah.
Crystal suggested for the housing presentation that we all go to our city council meeting and tell what went on. Now, I go to city council, but I do not report on these committee meetings. But at the senior citizen. Meeting for Mission Viejo, the Mission Viejo Community Senior Center. I report all the time. But there are only about 12 people there. And this one lady for years, every time I go to report, her eyes go back. They're not that interested.
Well, people get information overload as well. And so that's what we also have to think about as we're messaging.
Right, but that was that's just one lady.
I don't think anyone's going to go back and watch your presentation.
I can tell you
that.
No. And I guess my point is this one thing, and this is intended to be positive. It's one thing to say you're assigned to senior center. Mm-hmm. There also needs to be a mechanism that allows us to come back and say, here's some issues. Rather than, I went there and I just gave some, I dropped some paper off and, oh, hi, John. Great. I'm thrown over here or something like that. Anyway, my two cents.
Well, I found another issue too. San Clemente Senior Center, not funded by the city.
Yeah.
And so staff is spending all of their time on fundraising.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that city, that's a well established city, can't fund the senior center.
Oh.
It's run by Age Well.
Yeah, I think Costa Mesa is in it.
Costa Mesa, San Clemente, and Laguna Hills.
Yes.
And they all have a high number of older adult residents. Come on.
Any other sharing? I have one thing then. Let's say this committee continues in some capacity, whatever. If we get a report back from the organization that is doing the survey, and I would think we might be able to use that as a mechanism to say, so here's some areas of concern for senior engagement. And then that would be your vehicle, I think, to then say, okay, so do we tackle all of these? Do we tackle one of these? What's priority? And we either have a broad general discussion and target some actions, recommendations. To me, that's where we would be going, rather than we just take a piece of paper and say, okay, what presentation are we going to?
Right.
And maybe the presentations key into the survey results, and you find, you know,
we're getting there. We're just in limbo.
Yeah.
But we're getting there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I'm sure somebody will step up to be the chair. Okay. But
Now, if you want subcommittees, remember that you're going to volunteer for chairs.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So first, we got to get you here.
Yeah.
And then second, we got to find somebody to lead the group that's here.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. Oh, that's the thoughtful topic to drive home thinking about. Are there any other announcements or discussion items? Going once. Twice. Okay. If there is no other further discussion, then you just adjourn. See, it was a little softer that time. Okay.